May it please the court.
Third case. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Kent Hall of Indiana Legal Services, representing Deborah Countryman. Ms. Countryman is the appellant from a decision by the District Court for the Northern District of Indiana. The issue in this case is rather limited for two reasons. It involves the former bankruptcy statute, not the current bankruptcy statute. I will refer to that as the old law. And the precise question before this court is whether or not Ms. Countryman can file or could file a complaint in adversary proceeding to participate in the bankruptcy case without payment of a filing fee. The district court below, and both the district court and the bankruptcy court, held that they did not have the authority, that the bankruptcy court was not an Article III court and could not waive the filing fee. The facts of the case are that Ms. Countryman in 1989 was the buyer, the vendee, on a land contract on a house in South Bend. The house was owned by Mr. and Mrs. Prue. Subsequently, Mr. Prue died. For the first 13 years, from 1989 until 2002, Ms. Countryman paid the land contract payments directly to the Prues, and the Prues, who had a mortgage on the property, then conveyed the money to the lender. There have been various lenders over the years. Around 2002, Mr. Prue died, and Mrs. Prue said, "I don't want to be involved in this. I'd rather have you just pay the mortgage company directly," which is what Ms. Countryman did. There was no.
You don't have a lot of time here.
Right.
Let me ask you: can you file a motion in the bankruptcy court to proceed in forma pauperis, recognizing that the bankruptcy court doesn't have that authority to grant that, and couple that with a motion to transfer that issue to the district court to have the district court actually appoint?
Could I have done that? Permit
in forma pauperis?
Well, everybody in the bankruptcy court and the district court said we could not. Initially, Your Honor, we tried to get into the case simply by filing a claim. The debtor's attorney then objected to our filing a claim and said that we had to file a complaint in adversary proceeding, and the bankruptcy judge agreed with that and ordered us to file the complaint in adversary proceeding. We were told we had to pay the filing fee, which my client could not afford.
How much was that fee?
It was $150 at that time, Your Honor. The bankruptcy court then dismissed our complaint. The effect was my client was simply shut out of the entire process.
That's the problem that I don't think we would like to view the system as prohibiting somebody for financial reasons from getting into the courtroom. But I'm trying to conceptualize if there's a mechanism to do that without saying the bankruptcy court
is an Article III court. Let me suggest, Your Honor, that I realize the court would like to decide a case on as limited an issue or grounds as possible, and I've cited in my brief the fair amount of academic writing on this issue, even under the old law. And again, we're not talking about a petitioner in a bankruptcy asking for a waiver. We're talking about this unique character of the complaint and the adversary proceeding. I would have to say that the view that a bankruptcy court cannot do this is, I think, predicated on several mistaken assumptions. One is that the view that bankruptcy judges are not Article III judges because they are appointed for a specific term as opposed to each of your honors who serves for good behavior under Article III, Section 1. Nevertheless, those judges make their own decisions. For example, they're not like magistrate judges. They do not make a proposed recommendation. They do not, the district judge has to approve unless the parties have agreed. Secondly, the bankruptcy courts are administratively part of the district court, which is an Article III court. That is, the appeal went from the bankruptcy court to the district court. And essentially, we also see, thirdly, that bankruptcy courts exercise Article III type powers, such as holding litigants or lawyers in contempt. So for those reasons, I believe that in some way this bankruptcy court could have entertained the complaint.
Let me ask you this. Was a ruling made in Prue's bankruptcy proceeding pertaining to the land contract here? Do you know what that ruling was? Was it made?
There was no ruling on the merits, Your Honor. Let me just explain that. That the litigation started with the lenders foreclosing
right.
In state court. That proceeding is still going forward.
It's still pending.
It is still pending. Okay. There was partial summary judgment in state court foreclosing. There are counterclaims for violations of the Equal Credit Opportunity Act and that sort of thing. But the bankruptcy court never reached the merits of this at all.
Okay. And then are you familiar with this ruling in re Sarah Allen Home? It was a bankruptcy court in Pennsylvania that held that it could waive fees for an indigent creditor who brought an adversary complaint, finding that it would violate due process if the creditor could not protect its property interest. Do you have any thoughts on that reasoning and whether we should adopt that here?
Well, Your Honor, I have to say it's a new case as far as I guess I missed it. I'm not aware of the case, but I think the theory that you've mentioned is potentially very useful to us. I would finally like to say to the court that Ms. Countryman lived in the property until about the mid part of 2006. In the trial in the state court, it was determined that she paid about $43,000 either to the Prues or to the lenders on a land contract.
I mean, the merits, we can't really be concerned with the merits here.
I'm just trying to say, Your Honor, that under Indiana law, I cited in my brief the decision of Skenzel versus Marshall, so that my client is effectively a de facto or equitable mortgagor and would be treated in Indiana law as, even though she was a land contract buyer, an equitable mortgagor because of the substantial equity in the property.
So she has a lien on that, in effect.
She does.
Yeah, and I, as Judge Evans says, at some point somebody's going to make that determination, I guess.
Right.
But it's the question, your problem is how do you get into court to do it, I guess.
That's correct. And essentially all we wanted in the bankruptcy court, I will say very briefly, this is my final comment, we wanted a seat at the table. We wanted the lender was there, Mrs. Prue was there. We wanted to be there, and we wanted to find out whether we should be doing something in bankruptcy court or in state court. That concludes my argument, unless the court has any further.
I guess the only comment I have is it's unfortunate you're here for $150. I know that I'm not saying you're here to change the law or to do something or to use this case, but it would seem to me it'd be a lot easier to come up with $150 than to go through with all of this effort, frankly, that you're doing.
Your Honor, may I answer that in two ways? May I?
Sure.
Okay. Number one, my client is a disabled person who lives on Social Security benefits. She has an early adolescent daughter. Number two, I am a legal services lawyer, and under the policies of our program, we do not have funds. We cannot advance funds for that purpose. I can tell you that in 20 years of practice as a legal services lawyer, it's the first time a court ever turned down my request to waive a filing fee.
Okay. Obviously, you're making a yeoman's effort here, I hope it works out for you.
Well, I'll make a confession to you. As 27 years as an Article III judge, I always thought bankruptcy judges could do this. Let you proceed without failing a filing fee if you were legitimately indigent. Mm-hmm. I just thought, mm-hmm. I never crossed my mind that they couldn't do that.
Same here. It was a surprise to me, too.
So we have the law to deal with, and we'll try to figure out what to do.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And with nobody on the other side, we'll wish you good luck.
Okay, the case will be taken under advisement.